Hi, this is Jeff, host of the podcast. I have two quick things to tell you before we dive into my latest interview. First, if you use the Stitcher app for listening to podcasts, you need to listen to this. Unfortunately, the Stitcher app is closing at the end of August, so you'll need to find a new podcast app, either for Android or your iPhone. And when you start using your new podcast listening app, don't forget to subscribe to the Reading and Writing podcast so you won't miss a single episode. I have a podcast that I want to tell you about. I think you will like it. The Amelia Project. Have you ever wanted to disappear and start over? What if there was a company that could provide such a service? The Amelia Project is a fiction comedy podcast about a death-faking company. It is dark as cocoa beans and as silly as rainbow sprinkles. The Amelia Project is crammed full of comedy, mystery, twist, and fine beverages. If you like Sherlock Holmes, Dirk Gently, or Monty Python, this will be your cup of cocoa. You can listen to the Amelia Project podcast today wherever you get your podcasts. Search for the Amelia Project and look out for the logo of a black and orange phoenix rising from a cup. Listen today. Welcome back to the Reading and Writing Podcast. I'm joined on the podcast today by J.C. Hallman, author of the new book, Say Anarcha, A Young Woman, A Devious Surgeon, and the Harrowing Birth of Modern Women's Health. Brian Stevenson, bestselling author of Just Mercy and founder and executive director of the Equal Justice Initiative, wrote about the book. This compelling, extremely well-researched account of the life of an enslaved Black woman changes the historical narrative surrounding J. Marion Sims and engages us in a sober reckoning over the legacy of slavery, medical experimentation, and gynecology. This extraordinary book forces us to recognize that Anarcha is a name we should say, remember, and reflect upon as we still contend with a history of racial injustice that has left us vulnerable to continuing racial disparities in healthcare, injustice, and unnecessary suffering. JC, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks so much for having me.
Absolutely. Well, if someone hasn't yet heard about your new book, Say Anarcha, how would you describe the book?
So the book is a dual biography, and even though it is a very heavily researched book, it is a history that reads like a novel, and it is simultaneously a kind of forensic digging into the legacy of the so-called father of gynecology, J. Marion Sims, and at the same time, it's an excavation of the life of the young enslaved woman who was the most consequential of the experimental subjects that made Sims famous. So she's a lost hero, Anarcha. And so at the same time, I'm taking apart Sims' legacy, I'm trying to bring her story to life as well. And in a book that aspires to read something like a novel, I'm trying to do justice to this important and often overlooked piece of history of women's health.
And what led you to writing Say Anarcha?
I first just kind of stumbled across the story. You know, I think that, you know, I'm the author of six earlier books, and I think that in each of them, you know, I'm trying to make the world a better place in some way. Sometimes that's almost a sort of a way that's visible only to me. Sometimes it's a little more apparent. And in this case, I came across this story and I realized that it was really important. And in particular, even though people had written about this diabolical surgeon previously, what became apparent was that no one had actually gone looking for Anarcha. No one had tried to see if any evidence of her could be found. And so that became sort of the animating thing, that this was a story that needed to be told, that I had the right skill set, I had the right resources, I knew how to do it. And so that was the launching off point, the search for Anarcha.
And given what you just described, and given the time period when Anarcha lived, how did you approach the research for this book and trying to discover more information about her life?
Well, it was a long period of gathering. You know, it was much more than you know, just researching online or looking in, you know, some, you know, like the deeper dives you can take on Internet Archive or on HathiTrust or in some of the sources that can take you to very old documents online. It involved, you know, going to places. These experiments originally took place in Alabama. And so I went to Alabama and began doing work in archives, but then ultimately probate offices and in various historical societies, local historical societies. And then ultimately, you know, just being on the ground and talking to people and figuring out who had private manuscript collections. You know, it became, you know, something like a treasure hunt almost, you know, that searching for evidence really all across the country, it turned out, to find evidence of this important life.
Well, as you just described, I'm curious about the writing process for this book. And until you got into that research and going to Alabama and looking for records and manuscripts, did you know if there would be enough material to tell the story that you wanted to write?
Well, it happened in stages, you know. So the first thing I did is I went to Alabama for a brief trip. And, you know, that the curious thing about this particular story is that, you know, this woman, Anarcha, was known to have existed, but she was known to have existed only because this diabolical doctor had talked about her. And no one really trusted him, but he was the only source material that anybody had. So when I first went to Alabama, it was really just to see if any evidence at all could be found. And it was going to an archive and looking in some plantation estate materials and finding that first evidence of her that confirmed her existence. And then not too much later after that, you know, this doctor, he left Alabama eventually and he went to New York City. And he's opened a hospital there known as Woman's Hospital. And I found the records of that hospital at another archive. And then I found Anarcha there as well, which was a big surprise because no one knew anything about her. No one really knew what had happened to her. And here I stumbled across something that suggested that she'd left Alabama, that she had actually been in New York, and that Sims had experimented on her. Not only in this initial group of experiments that lasted from 1846 to 49, but 8 years later, again, in 1857. And so in terms of my process, you know, that was what I had. That was when I knew I was on a story. But you're right. It took more than that. And eventually I had to go back to Alabama. And this is a couple of years later when I'm you know, researching other aspects of the story and making myself familiar with a lot of the secondary materials. But I go back to Alabama to gather more information, to do a much more in-depth search. So that initial trip, that initial discovery was just to say, well, could she be found? And then the subsequent work, which was a, you know, months-long process of searching and gathering, That was the work of actually discovering the materials upon which the book would then be based.
Well, given what you just described, probate records, these historical hospital records that are decades old, if not, you know, much, much older, do you know, are there any organizations that are trying to get some of those records digitized and available?
You know, it's a very controversial history, and some of the stuff is available online, but some of it, you know, that there are people out there who are still champions of this diabolical doctor. And sometimes there are efforts to hide those materials or to make them not available. And so, you know, it was sometimes a battle just to get to them at all. And, you know, I'm a little worried that we're making the book sound like it's a scholarly, because this is, you know, we're talking about sources and we're talking about history. And,
sure.
And it is, you know, that, but this is a weird case where, you know, someone who's trained as a creative writer, I was trained as a creative writer, but I wound up doing a lot of the digging that we normally associate with scholarship. But, it struck me from the very beginning that this was a story that needed to be told in scenes and in characters. It all needed to feel lived in a way. And so even though the book is very heavily researched, you know, the way that it reads, I hope is that it's a story. And I think it's important that that story be based on all of that new information that I uncovered, but it's not only a book for scholars, say. It's, you know, it's intended for people who want to read a compelling story, a difficult story, but a story which allows us to bear a kind of witness to an important and an often misrepresented bit of history.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
Sure. Well, before you wrote this book, what would most doctors have known about Dr. J. Marion Sims?
So Sims was heralded. He was one of the world's first celebrity surgeons, and he had plenty of critics in his own day for his methods and what he did. But particularly early in the 20th century, those voices tended to be drowned out by a kind of mob of champions and apologists. And so there's a lot of things about Sims that people believe that are just demonstrably false, but it's a very, very deeply entrenched history. And because that history is so relevant to even how we think about women's health today and women's bodily autonomy, it is important to reevaluate that history and to dig deep into the sources to find out what really happened. And the, you know, and that was the work I was trying to do. But again, in telling the story, to tell it in a way that wasn't going to have the story be, you know, something that only, you know, scholars would debate at conferences and stuff.
Sure. Well, you mentioned you referenced Sims as diabolical. Can you give us a sense of why you're using that word?
Well, you know, it's you know, he one of the stories I tell in the book is that he was friends with P.T. Barnum, the well-known showman, the guy who's really the godfather of everybody who ever, called themselves a showman since, or was thought of as being a showman. And it was just apparent in looking at digging forensically into his story and essentially fact-checking everything he said about himself and what others said about him, that he was a craven pursuer of fame and wealth. And I think he's not Jonas Salk, right? He's not like a doctor who we herald for having made this essential advance. I mean, he actually is that. I mean, he's in the sense that people do believe that about him. There are statues erected to him and so on. But it turns out that all of it is false, and all of it was a function of Sim's own efforts at self-aggrandization. But also, again, that mob of apologists who worked to erect a biographical facade to this guy that just turns out to be false in so many ways.
Well, in researching this interview, I ran across several articles that attributed vaccine hesitancy among African Americans to Sim's legacy. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I think that African Americans have long had a well-founded concern that doctors in the medical community are not going to have their best interests at heart. And, you know, there's the longstanding belief that Black women don't feel pain. There's the many times that African Americans have been subjected to medical experimentation without their consent. That history goes way back, and Sims is part of that. You know, this series of experiments performed on Anarka and on approximately 9 other enslaved women in Montgomery, Alabama, in the late 1840s, is just one of the early examples of that. And so that kind of foundational history of abuse, it echoes down through time, and it doesn't just go away. And so in the pandemic, when African Americans in particular were expressing some concern about taking the COVID vaccines, it was completely understandable because so often they had been subjected to experimentation. And you have to wonder whether there had been a more robust effort to reckon with this particular history, if that wouldn't have saved lives during the pandemic. And so this isn't just a case where it's just a bit of history, a bit of a very disturbing history that we need to acknowledge and recognize. It has these modern resonances, and I think that's what the articles that you're reading are talking about.
Sure. Well, do you think that more doctors are starting to question or think about the original medical experiments that led to many well-known surgical procedures, or do you think most current doctors are just busy working and not thinking about the history of the field?
No, I think it is beginning to change. It's not easy because, entrenched narratives, particularly when they're false, they resist that kind of revision, right? But it's happening, so one of Sim's 3 monuments in the United States has now been removed. He had a monument in Central Park that's been taken down. And that's good, and it's not only historians who are doing it. It is sometimes doctors and physicians working inside of medical organizations where there are still doctors who are quite loyal to this particular legacy. So there's an ongoing debate that's happening, but it's important to note that the concern that some have is that the reevaluation of this history and others like it is part of some projection of modern values into the past, and that's just not what's happening in this case. Sim's greatest critics were his assistants, the doctors who were sitting right beside him as he worked. He had an assistant in Alabama and another in New York, and they went on to be his biggest critics. And other doctors, too, in Sims' own time, warned against the proliferation of what he stood for. But it was these same types of doctors who tended to argue on behalf of a humbler profession. So it's not really a surprise then that those critics would be drowned out by those hagiographers and apologists who later worked to erect both literal Sims monuments and his historical facade. So it is definitely happening today that doctors are beginning to recognize this history. But for some, it amounts to an overturning of decades of investment in a history that they completely believed, and getting those type of people to reevaluate that history is hard, but it's happening. It's just happening more slowly than probably a lot of people would like.
Have you started thinking beyond, say, Anarcha? Do you know what you may want to write next?
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I've already, I already have another book in the can. You know, I had a novel that I'd started, before I wrote, say, Anarcha, and then after the book was done, I returned to it, and it's kind of sitting there. But I'm working on a couple of podcasts right now, and as well, I'm beginning to research a story about Thurgood Marshall and his journey to Korea to investigate African-American soldiers who were accused of cowardice in the beginning of the Korean War.
That's interesting. Well, what books have you read recently that you enjoyed?
I am currently reading a brand new book by a young Native American writer, Brendan Basham. And he is, it's called Swim Home to the Vanished. It's going to be appearing soon. And it's very good. I'm enjoying that. And recently I read a biography of Lydia Mariah Child by a writer, a philosopher from Colby College in Maine named Lydia Moland. It's an excellent biography. That Lydia Mariah Child, she popped up in Say Anarcha, so I had some interest there. But that the life of Lydia Mariah Child is another really important, history. She was an abolitionist. And so that's a couple of books that have come across my desk recently that I've enjoyed.
Well, where can people find you online if they want to learn more about you and your books and your latest book, Say Anarcha?
Sure. So, they can just search for me, J.C. Hallman, at jchallman.com. And as well, I created a resource, a couple of resources. There's a YouTube channel. And there's a kind of an online archive for the sources of Say Anarcha, which you can find if you just search for Anarcha Archive. That was important, I thought. When it comes to sort of overturning these entrenched narratives, it's really important not only that you write the book, but that you also give people the ability to scrutinize what it is you've done. So I've tried to put all of the sources of the book online so that people can engage with it and they can find that at anarchaarchive.com.
Again, we've been speaking to J.C. Hallman, author of the new book, Say Anarcha, A Young Woman, A Devious Surgeon, and the Harrowing Birth of Modern Women's Health. The book is available now, so go buy a copy. And J.C., thanks for doing this interview.
Sure. Thanks much.
Absolutely.
In later census records of Alabama, a few Anikas and Anikis were described as keeps house, or deserve, or wife. And surely this would have included cooking. But Anarcha was not a cook. She never learned to cook when she was young. But there were times, after she was too old to be brought to the Westcott house on Sundays for good food, when she carried meals in from the kitchen. A freestanding building erected a short way off from the house to prevent the spread of fires. She carried to the dining room the biscuits and the coffee that slaves coveted, but were afforded only on holidays. One morning, knowing that no one had counted or could count the huge stack of waffles that she was bringing to the table. Anarka stole one, a single waffle, crisp and delicate and melting inside her mouth, as luscious as a fulfilled promise. It was at this moment, when she compared the waffle to the goobers, and the whippoorwill peas, and the crackling bread, and the parched corn and okra seed coffee that she now ate and drank daily, to the raccoon and the opossum on which the slaves would feast in the quarters if the missus gave the men a pass to hunt after sundown. The coon more delicate, and the hare didn't stink up the meat. That she realized she was a thing that was owned, an object like the wooden spoon that she had clutched to her chest when she walked up to the Westcott house on Sundays, or like the two coins that Priscilla Westcott dug out of the pocket of her dress to show her money, though she wouldn't let Anarka touch them.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
When you visit Arizona, time is measured in moments, not minutes. Like the moment your work stress disappears as you kayak through the canyons. Or the moment you discover the life-changing effects of prickly pear chocolate. But nothing beats the moment you see the Grand Canyon for the very first time. Visit a new state of mind. Learn more at hereyouareaz.com.